Megillah. We're ending at 6:29. Guys, move forward. The Megillah is referred to as an Igeres. Source number one: the Tichtov Esther Hamalka Basavichayol Mordechai Yehudi is called Tokef Lekayim Es Igeres Hapurim Azos Hashenis. Very strange word. So the Gemara says very, very briefly. Source number two: Amr Chelba Amr Rav Chama Bar Guria Marav Megillah Nikrei Sefer VeNikrei Igeres. On the one hand, it's called a Sefer. And the word Sefer is very formal. The word Sefer means Tanakh. Whenever the word, guys, where are the sheets? Quickly. Yeah, we don't have time for this. Guys, where are the sheets? Okay, fine, there we go. Thank you. Quickly, the word Sefer in Tanakh means Sefer. V'nichtav ba-Sefer. That's very formal, the way you write Tanakh, with the ksav and with the gvil, and you roll it. And the word Igeres is informal. A letter. In our jargon, a WhatsApp versus a letter. A WhatsApp, you know, it's like whatever you want. Now the Gemara says, because it's called an Igeres, there's a dynamic between Igeres and Sefer. Because it's called a Sefer, you have to use kosher sinews to hold the parchments together. You can't use synthetic, you can't use non-kosher sinews. I'm just summarizing the Gemara, source number two. But because it's called Igeres, you don't need every single sinew to be kosher. Just a few of them in the Megillah, three on every seam, or maybe three in the whole Megillah. Take a look at source number two. But Chazal were already sensitive that Megillah is part of Kisvei HaKodesh, part of Tanakh, like Kohela, Shir HaShirim, Yeshaya, Yirmiyah, formal, then it's also an Igeres. It's also a letter. And because it's a letter, the Ramban elaborates. That's why you don't roll it. You fold it. You'll see tomorrow night they're going to fold the Megillah. Because it's an Igeres. And that's why you'll see you can have histrionic reading. You don't have to read and end at the Pasuk. You can stop in the middle of a Pasuk, which is a no-no for Yisro or Mishpatim or Terumah. You have to stop at the end, the Ramban says. And that's why the Gemara says, the first mission in the third parak of Megillah, Hakaris and Megillah, Omid V'Yoshev, the Baal Kriya, during Parshas Shkala, must stand. But the Baal Kriya, we paskin l'chakil, you stand. But b'di'evad, the Baal Kriya can sit during Kriyas HaMegillah, because like, you know, I'm sitting there talking to you. So there are real halachic ramifications for the fact that the Megillah is not just part of Kisvei HaKodesh, but it's a letter. Why is that so important in Megillah, Esther? Tonight's a shiur, not about the halacha. I'd love to give you a halachic shiur for 28 minutes. I got to go to the Makola, these guys. But why is Igeres so important? Why is that important? Not everything that happened makes it in. And not everything that makes it in has halachic impact. Why is it so important? So to understand this, you need three introductions. Three steps back, and then you'll get it. Light bulb moment. Introduction number one, when did Purim happen? Introduction number two, what happened to Jewish language? Introduction number three, why are letter writers in Megillah Esther rock stars? Josh, get a sheet, you need a sheet, okay? Number one, the biggest mistake people make with Hanukkah and Purim, and I talked to you about this in Hanukkah, I call it the miracle in a bottle. It happened, they wanted to destroy us, and Hashem saved us. That happened throughout history, we don't have a Yom Tov every time it happened. There are distinct historical consequences to Hanukkah and Purim. We talked about Hanukkah, end of the second Beis HaMikdash, restoration of Jewish sovereignty, before the long Gullus. It has a historical impact. Bam! That's why it becomes a Yom Tov. You got to get the history of Purim, or all it is a Haman three-cornered hat, Haman Tashin, destroy the Jews, Hashem saved them. It's not. The Jews received, the beginning of Sefer Ezra, the Jews received permission to return to Yerushalayim and build the Beis HaMikdash. They return, they start, they build, and then it's stalled. And it stalls because of opponents to Jewish occupation. The exact same story, the exact same story that you're living through right now in Gush Etzion. Locals, we're not opposed to Jews, we just are opposed to Jewish imperialism and colonialization. And that's the story in the beginning of Ezra, and they send letters back to Koresh, Nichtavei Sitna, letters of hatred. Read Ezra. You want to understand Megillah Esther, you got to read Ezra. You got to read Daniel also, but at least read Ezra. You don't read the first couple of Prokhim of Ezra. It's a miracle in a bottle, miracle in a vacuum. And then it stalls, and it stalls for 18 years. Look at the first Rashi in Ezra. You'll get all this in the first Rashi in Sefer Ezra. And 18 years later, Ezra and Nehemiah rally the troops, return sadly with only 44,000, because everyone stays in Los Angeles. Everyone stays in Babel. There's a little comment here. Everyone stays in Los Angeles. Everyone stays in Babel. But they come back. 44,000 come back. 18-year gap. Silver Springer. 18-year gap. 18-year... No time for jokes. Don't get me. 28 minutes. 18-year gap. Seriously, guys. According to Chazal, the timeline of Chazal is very different than archaeology and science. The timeline of Chazal is that the miracle of Purim happens right in the middle of that 18-year period. Between the first return and the eventual culmination. It's exactly when Purim occurs. Why do you think Rav Shimon bar Yochai's Tamidim indict the Jews for having participated in Achashverosh's party? What's so bad? The food was kosher. So one answer to the question, we don't have time for now, is because it's an orgy and it's immoral and it's gluttony and it's people acting as you shouldn't. And you got to know, oh my goodness, you got to know this, guys. You can't judge a situation solely by whether the food is kosher. For the next 10 years, especially in your life, you'll have to make decisions. Kosher food, but should my neshama be there? You're going to have to make that decision so often. And you're going to have to come to a conclusion, the food's kosher, but it is not a place for me to be. This is not a place where a Ben Torah should be. The food is kosher, because today kosher food is all over. But this party, this event, this situation, it's just not where I should be. It's not healthy for my neshama. It may be healthy for my kosher food habits, but it's not where I should be. But the second reason the Jews are critiqued for participating from Achashverosh Suda is, it's one thing to enjoy yourself in Shushan. It's another thing to indulge in a 180-day party in Shushan while Jews are being slaughtered in Israel or dying in Israel, building your future. Sometimes I travel to Chutzlars and people ask me, what can we do? What can we do for Israel? And they expect money. I say, all that's true. But Chas Hashem, on a day there's a terror incident in Israel, the suffering in Israel, Baruch Hashem, we haven't had, Baruch Hashem. If you have tickets that night to a baseball game or to a movie, don't you dare. You can't cry? We here, we cry. We sit by the graves, we meet the people, we cry our eyes out. I lived through 48 hours of apocalypse, emotionally. And I know when I'm in Chutz Laaretz, I can't cry because it's too far. I'm listening to it on CNN or for Rosh Hashanah. But at least be respectful. The notion that people are sacrificing their lives to build your future and your grandchildren's future, and you're going to come to see the Kotel, to see Mar HaZeh Ben, to come for Yom Tov, and people are laying, and you're sitting in a stadium with 50,000 people cheering for people in pajamas, hitting balls over the wall? That's offensive. That's offensive. And I've applied this in my life in Eretz Yisrael. There are times in Eretz Yisrael, I don't have time to tell you the story, where I had to make hard decisions about my family's choices, decisions that cost my family money. I said, we can't go away now. We can't. It's just not fair. People are being uprooted from their homes in Gaza, and I don't care what you think about the politics. We can't go to an amusement park today. Simply put, we labored over these decisions. We can't go out to dinner tonight. Purim provides, this is another point. This is the first introduction. Purim provides the thrust for the final return. Everything is stalled. It starts. It stalls. Purim provides the thrust for the return. National pride, national energy, trust in Hashem, wealth. Remember we talked about wealth earlier this week? Haman had the wealth base. Haman, I gave the shiur on Sunday. That's why it's important for Mordechai to receive all of Haman's wealth. Who cares? He got rich. Base Haman, now we have resources to rebuild and move back and gather and take flights and nefesh. Now we can move. That's the first introduction, the historical framework and role for Purim. Second introduction. When the Jews went into Galus, they lost their Beis HaMikdash. They lost the direct voice of Hashem because there's no Nevuah in Galus. But it wasn't just a collapse religiously. Karbanos, Kohen Gadol, Yom Kippur. It was a collapse culturally. And for us, we believe deeply that your cultural identity is part of your religious identity. And the deeper you feel your Judaism, the deeper you'll feel your religion. On all these interviews, I'm not really conducting interviews on Zoom, but I would always ask, tell me the best Jew you ever met who isn't from. And I want to see, do you love Jews? Menachem Begin, easy answer. He's obviously from. There's something about the Jews in there in Mitzrayim lost everything, right? They lost that. They were off their Avodah Zarah. What did they keep? names, language, and dress. And that was the platform for spiritual rejuvenation. You want to raise your kids, right? Raise them to be proud Jews who love Jews, who deeply feel their Jewishness, and then that's a solid platform for religion. Sometimes when that platform's missing, religion sometimes crumbles too quickly. It's not tethered to deep, deep, deep identity. They lost everything. They lost sovereignty. They lost their army. They lost their king. They lost their monarchy. They lost everything. And they're struggling for their identity. And you know what else they lost when they left Yerushalayim? They lost language. Because language is identity. And people stopped speaking Hebrew because Hebrew became an irrelevant, archaic language. Why should we speak Hebrew if Jews have it? Jews will end. Judaism will end. Why should we speak Latin? Why? In this room, just so much to say. In this room, I sat in 1985, and Rav Aaron was teaching us Maseches Nedarim. He was sitting here, I was sitting where Yonah is, more or less. And we were learning the first Ran in Nedarim, and Rav Aaron was talking about the Ran. What happens if you articulate a Neder in an outdated language? And to help give an example, Rav Aaron said, let's say I make a Neder in Anglo-Saxon, and I'm the only person, let's say, who still speaks Anglo-Saxon. And we all nodded our heads. It's not a let's say, Rabbi. You probably are the last person who speaks. It's not a hypothetical. So like we're like pinching ourselves. It's not a hypothetical. Like, why don't you speak Anglo-Saxon? The nachts and nachts. Who cares? Doesn't make a difference anymore. Why do you think Daniel is written in Aramaic? Why do you think the first part of Ezra, when they're in Gullus, is written in Aramaic? Because Hebrew doesn't matter anymore. Because Jewish identity is collapsing, and with the collapse comes the loss of language. Mordechai is the image of the loss of language. Like I said, again, just really, really quick sources. Take a look at source number 7, 8. Mordechai is referred to in Nehemiah as Mordechai Bilshan. Why is he called Mordechai Bilshan? Why is his nickname Bilshan? So the Gemara says, source number 7, we're going backwards. He's called Bilshan, last line. To have a Bayil Lishni Vidarish. He was, all the Sanhedrin knew 70 languages, and he was part of the Sanhedrin. But he was adept at mixing all the languages, Bayil. He mixed them all up. You know, Hebrew, French, Spanish, Portuguese, Iranian, all the same. Yeah, throw it in there. So Mordechai is all the same language, it's all mixed up languages. Wait a second. Who's the only person in Tanakh that doesn't have a Jewish name? Who's the only Navi who doesn't have a Jewish name? Now a Jewish name, but it's not original. Mordechai, Marduk is a Persian king. Baruch Hashem, now it's a Jewish name. Any Mordechai? Not in the room. Oh, you're a Mordechai. Baruch Hashem, this is your Yom Tov. This is your Yom Tov. Mordechai is the symbol of the crashing language, of the lack of Jewish, lack of... Close the door, Josh. Because Jewish identity is collapsing. Language is collapsing. And there's a struggle for Jewish identity. And Purim is part of that struggle for Jewish identity. For the return. Why do we eat Hamantasha? What does the Ramah say? Why do we eat Azne Haman? Say it like an Israeli. Why do we eat Azne Haman? What does the Ramah say? Anyone know the real reason? The Ramah, not... Ramah says because we want to remember Daniel. Because he... What's the word I'm looking for? He... Sneaked in. What's a better word for sneaked in? He smuggled. Thank you. A little tar. Thank you. Listen, he smuggled seeds to eat. And the original Hamantasha were poppy seeds. I know, yeah, but do you know anyone? You know anyone under 50 who eats poppy seed Hamantasha? Okay, come to my house. You got a lot of them. You're the guy who likes the black jelly beans. You always cash in, right? Okay. Anyway, fish. I'd love it. Mark, I'd love it. I'd love it if you guys to come. Oh my goodness, you can't imagine. More than you want to come, I want you guys to come. Anyway, I'm asking Ellie, still isn't going to back to me, whether you guys can come for sure. Okay, great, you're all over my... Guys, we have 12 minutes. Stop distracting me. So much to say, so little time to say it. Why is Daniel so important in Esther, about 70 years apart? Why are we shouting out to Daniel? After all, not only do we shout out with the Hamantasha, but according to Chazal, where's Daniel in Megillah's Esther? What? Hazach. Oh, we're making believe he's part of Megillah. Why is it so important to bring Daniel into Megillah's Esther?
The answer is because in the beginning of Daniel, because you've all read Sefer Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar has a plan. It's a very sincere plan. He's going to help the Jews segue into Babylonian culture. What he's going to do is he's going to select a cadre of up-and-coming Jews, young Jews, 40 under 40, 30 under 30, put them in the Babylonian palace, acculturate them to Babylonian culture, food and palace ritual, and they'll help these older Jews, when they come to the Lower East Side, they'll help them speak English. They'll help them. And Daniel gets what Nebuchadnezzar is up to. Someone give Moshe some shita. He gets what Nebuchadnezzar is up to. So he refuses to eat the pasbag hamelech, the patbag hamelech. It's kosher. But he's protecting his identity. He knows if I start eating Babylonian bread, I'm going to lose my Jewish identity. Then we're lost. Those are his two stands. I'm not going to eat your bread. And therefore I have to smuggle some high protein seeds in from the local guards. And I'm going to dive into Yerushalayim through an open window. And that gets him thrown into the den of lions. Because he knows that without remembering Yerushalayim or without maintaining Jewish identity, he's cooked. So he makes a stand. He's the first person. As Gullus begins, he makes a stand. And now as Gullus is about to end, let's bring him into the... Let's give him an honorable mention. Let's eat the Hamantashen to remember who made the first stand. Who stood tall? That was Daniel. And now we're about to come back, so let's remember. Who make the stand. One day you'll tell your child, I went to Gush. I made the stand. I went to Gush. I went... You know, I obstacle to peace. So number two is, it's not just a struggle within which Purim happens, but it's a struggle for a culture and identity, and language is quickly disintegrating. That's why when Ezra returns, he tries to redo the language. What's Ezra's language rejuvenation? He redoes the fonts. He brings back Ksav Ashuri. So he realizes he has to rejuvenate Hebrew language. Okay. Introduction number one happens 18-year period, final thrust. Introduction number two, part of the struggle for identity. Introduction number three, letter writers in that period of time were not just postalmen. Letter writers were rock stars. Why? Because around this period of time, you have the emergence of the first multi-regional empires. It used to be your empire was the country of Egypt. It was within 2-3 days travel, and everyone was the same ethnicity and culture. So you just sent your palace assistant, go tell the people in the outer settlement of Egypt, tell them this is the king's wish, and they'll fulfill. You're starting to see multi-regional empires. The first multi-regional empire is Sancheir of Melech Ashur, who collects the entire Middle Eastern croissant, and he unites them. And then that empire cedes to Nebuchadnezzar, and then the Babylonian empire catch up, cedes to Persia. And how many Medinos does Ahasuerus rule over? 127. And are they localized? Absolutely not. They're Hodrad Kush. Amvam Kilshana, Kirsavam, different cultures, different ethnicities, Azerbaijans, Begans, and Afrikaners, and Finland, no whole mix. Melting pot. Chushans, city never sleeps, melting pot. Now there's a problem. How are you going to dispatch your directives across the globe? And it's going to take 2 years for your wishes to get there. And you may die before your letter reaches the outer Mongolia or the outer shores of Spain. You need people who know how to write letters that are signed with the insignia of the king that carry authority. And when people read those letters, they will shudder and they will jump at command. And there's an art to letter writing. Nebuchadnezzar got his origins as a letter writer in the Assyrian army. And to be a letter writer was to be part of the paranobility. I can't read all the psukim to you, but take a look at, I don't know where, every passage, source number four. Ha'achashdranim b'nei ha'ramachim. How many times do we have to read about the fashtunkana achashdranim b'nei ha'ramachim in the Megillah? Who cares? Who cares how they found out? They found out, obviously. And evidently, to be an achashdran, you have to be a ramach, the son of a ramach. Because it was a caste system. If your father wasn't a Ramach, whatever that means, because Chazal say in Megillah, we don't even know what those words mean. It's some vague notion. You couldn't be an Achashdran unless your father was a Ramach. And then you moved up from being, oh, come on, shoot me now. Why do I care about the Achashdran and B'nai Ramachim all the time? Just say they found out. Because these were important people. I remember as a child, it always bothered me. Mordechai and Esther are begging Ahasuerus, rescind, rescind, rescind. He says, well, I can't really revoke the letter. I got a new letter. Like, come on. stop nickel and diming me. I can't rescind, but I'll write a new letter. Now I get it. Rescinding the authority of a letter would lead to a collapse of the entire system of authority that letters were meant to represent. Because the second that one letter is rescinded, every letter is suspected. I cannot rescind the letter, because once I rescind the letter, every time a letter is sent, there may be rescinded. When people in outer Russia receive Ahasuerus' letter, they have to shake this letter. If we don't follow this letter in 5 years, the Persian army is going to crush us. I'll write a second letter. That's fine. I have to maintain the integrity of letters. I can't. It makes sense. He's not just acting foolishly and whimsically. I can't. Those are your three introductions to understand what's happening. One, it's not a miracle in a bottle. It's a miracle that provides thrust for the final return. It's part of the struggle that's been raging for 70 years. Number two, the struggle isn't just about can we return to build the Beis HaMikdash. It's a larger, more holistic struggle. Are we Jews or are we Persians? A whole different shiur. I'm trying to slide in a whole different shiur. What was Haman's Hava mean? We like Hava means. What would he think? He wasn't an idiot. He knows that Paro failed. He knows that Sennacherib failed. He knows that Nebuchadnezzar. Everyone fails. Why is he all of a sudden going to succeed? Because Haman was the first Christian. Haman knew the Jews were chosen. But he gambled that we betrayed Hashem. And we were no longer the Jews' chosen people. And he had pretty good proof because we were kicked out of Yerushalayim. Yesh no am echad mefuzar mefar ben am. They're just normal people. Now we can replace them. He wasn't a Christian theologically. He was probably Zoroastrian or something. But he launched the claim that Christianity would promulgate first. He was the first person to say they were chosen, but they're no longer chosen. When Shmuel started to teach his Talmidim, Megillas Esther, he began with the following pasuk. Every Amora, when they taught Megillah to the Talmidim, they picked a pasuk out of Tanakh to tweak out an idea that was latent in Tanakh that wasn't obvious. When Shmuel, the Amora, taught his Talmidim, Megillas Esther, he started Talmidim, V'af gam zos bi'el sam bi'eretz oivehem, the message of Megillah is there's no hafaras abris. There's no hafaras abris. You can be far away, you can be a sinner, you can betray me. The bris continues. Zacharti lachesed nurayach. The hafar is brisi. Lo me'astim v'lo ge'altim l'chalusam l'hafar brisi itam. Because that's what Purim reminded us. That was Haman's gamble. He obviously lost. So we're fighting over language and identity. And letter writing is really important. Now, there are 10 letters in Megillas Esther. I don't have time to take you through the 10 letters. There are 10 letters, 10 parties. Those are the two literary tropes that hold Megillas Esther together. Look carefully, you'll find them. Every single letter written about the Jewish annihilation is written and translated into every single language. Except for one. Which language were the letters not written in? Because it didn't matter. Because it was a dead language. Why would you write a letter in Hebrew? And every time the letters are written, I'll just pick one example here, okay? Source number 12. Vayishlach Sfarim is about men ruling women in their homes. Vayishlach Sfarim. El kol medino samalach medino medino kichsava amvam kil shono. Look at 13. That's the letter of the destruction. They all come out, Achashtar Pnei Melech, again, the Pashtonkana, Achashtranim, Achashtvanim, Ramok. All these rock stars, because they're influencers, they're social influencers, they have Instagram pages. Oh, I'm an Achashtran. And they bring the letters, and there's Ballyhoo, the Achashtranim are coming, the Ramachim are coming, the Achashtar Pnei Melech are here, wow, the king. Source number 13. El Sarei Amvam, Medina Medina Kichsava, the Amvam Kilshano, B'Shem HaMelech HaShvaraj Nichtam, no Hebrew, Amvam. I always think when I read this post, I start crying about Jews that landed in Auschwitz, not just from Germany, who understood Germany. Imagine landing from Holland or Paris and being hustled off of a train in which you've been suffering for weeks, starved and deprived, and dogs are barking at you, and you don't even understand the language that they're barking at you. When you understand the language, it's really hard. I think about the Jews who had to learn about their genocide from their Persian neighbors. Like, what does it say? I don't read Persian. Oh, it says, you're going to kill me, right? Oh, that's what it says. Until it all switches and it all flips. And Hashem intervenes. And Hashem provides the final thrust. And then the letter is written, source 14, about the Jews defending themselves. Vayikaru Safra Melech Baisahi Bechodesh HaShlishi Uchodesh Sivan, our month, Mishloshav Yasrim Bao, Chodesh Sivan. Vayikasev Yecholesh Yerzivar Mordechai Layudin, Ashtabardin. Midino Midina Kichtava. V'yam v'am kil shono. Look at 14. Here's the light bulb. What are the last four words of that pasuk? Kichtavam v'chil shono. Now Hebrew is alive. And now letters are being written in Hebrew. Because redemption has begun. And language is resuscitated. And Jewish identity is restored. And Hebrew matters. And all the letters before weren't written in Hebrew. But the letters forward are written in Hebrew. And that's why it's so important to call Megillas Esther an Igeres, to remind us of this theme. That the Igeres was the vehicle to portray how the Jews were suffering and how they recovered in the struggle for language. Because Igeres matter. These are rock stars. These are people of social influence. And the carry letter is not written in Hebrew, and it just reminds us of how downtrodden and persecuted. All of a sudden the letters are in Hebrew, and it all changes. There's a Gemara Menachos that Mordechai actually makes it back to Eretz Yisrael and becomes a master of Hebrew, but I can't read that with you now. This Mordechai Baalishni. Oy, so in 1 minute or less, what's the message, guys? Two words. This is even more basic. Only if I have three-word messages. This is a two-word message. Speak Hebrew. Speak Hebrew. It will be part of your frumkeit. Practically, because it will open you up to so much Torah. Practically, because it will open you up to so many Jews. You'll land anywhere in the world. Jews speak, even Pidgin Hebrew. That's our language. I understand why Yiddish. I mean, I speak Yiddish, but I understand why people want to preserve Yiddish, because it preserves identity. I mean, again, the odds are against it. It's going to disappear at some point, probably. But Hebrew won't, because it's an entire national movement. But it's not just practically who will open you up to, but it's your identity. Like, if you don't speak Hebrew, your identity as a Jew is partially deficient. And when your identity as a Jew is partially deficient, that religion won't be as resonant. So speak Hebrew. That's why it's called the Igeres. Go to the Makolet and order your food in Hebrew. Ifo, guy. Ifo, I'm Shako. Okay. Ifo is Neman. Don't say I'm a Dutch. Ifo is Neman. Get out of here, guys. Go to the Makolet.